Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now Blog Talk Radio Show, brought to you by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, also known as NASCA. My name is Tammy Schaffstall. I'm calling in from Lighthouse Point, Florida, and I will be your host tonight. I'm also a survivor of child abuse. Tonight's show is an open mic show, question and answer. We do have our special guest, Dr. Jaime Romo. He is a survivor calling in from Los Angeles, California. Before we get started with the show, let me tell you a little bit about NASCA. The National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse is a nonprofit 501c3 organization, and we're self-supporting through our own contributions. If you'd like to donate to NASCA, we really would appreciate it. And it is tax deductible because we are a 501c3. Here at NASCA, we have a single purpose: to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two perspectives. First, we educate the public, especially as getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. And we present the facts to show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. We also offer hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone who is interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Here at NASCA, we ask you to be aware, be a voice, be a hero, be brave. We're fighting for kids and we're serving adult survivors. Like I said, tonight's show is an open mic show, question and answer. We'd love to have people call in. We know that a lot of people do stream in from the stats. If you're ready to call in, we'd love to have you join the discussions, and we can certainly use the support. The telephone number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And it's a very friendly, safe environment where you can discuss issues with other survivors. So please call in. We do have Pamela calling in from Los Angeles, and she's also a host in training, and I'm pleased to have her. Good evening, Pamela. How are you?
I'm doing good. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. Hi, Tammy. It's Pamela.
Hi.
LA is Louisiana.
Okay. LA, Louisiana. Well, Louisiana is LA, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Initials for Louisiana is LA?
Yes, ma'am.
I can barely hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me? Yeah, I can hear you a little bit better now. Well, thank you for calling in. I used to live in Shreveport, Louisiana, like I told you before, in the Bossier-Shreveport area, so I know it well. Thank you for calling in. I really appreciate the support.
Okay.
Sure. Like I said, if anyone is listening, please call in 646-595-2118. Dr. Jaime Romo is here with us. To tell you a little bit about Dr. Romo, He is a survivor professional, and he is from the San Diego, California area. He's an educator, consultant, author, and commissioned minister who promotes healing from abuse and prevention of child abuse, particularly abuse by the religious authorities in the context of a religious setting. He's working a workbook that he wrote, Healing the Sexual Abused Heart, a workbook for survivors, thrivers, and supporters. And it's always a good show when Dr. Romo is in on the show with us, and I really appreciate him joining us. I'm going to open his mic as well. Good evening, Dr. Romo. How are you?
Hi, Tammy. I'm both good and tired.
Oh, I can imagine.
And I mentioned that specifically, not like that it's just me. I think a lot of people are tired, and some of it relates to old, you know, unresolved stuff, trauma, and some of it is just the ongoing, you know, loss and call it, you know, trauma of the day to day, that all the different things that we're dealing with. And so I have some thoughts about talking about that tonight.
Okay, well, I'm going to turn the mic over to you. So if you want to tell us what's on your heart, what theme you want to start off with, the mic is yours.
Well, thank you. I would actually like to read a poem that I heard recently that at first I really didn't like. But the more I saw it and actually, you know, reflected with others, you know, it opened up some real good insight. And so I'll read it and welcome the conversation that follows. It's called A Blessing for One Who is Exhausted by the poet John O'Donohue. When the rhythm of the heart becomes hectic, time takes on the strain until it breaks. Then all the unattended stress falls in on the mind like an endless, increasing weight. Light in the mind becomes dim. Things you could take in your stride before now become laborsome events of will. Weariness invades your spirit. Gravity begins falling inside you, dragging down every bone. The tide you never valued has gone out, and you are marooned on unsure ground. Something within you is closed down, and you cannot push yourself back to life. You've been forced to enter empty time. The desire that drove you is relinquished. There's nothing else to do now but rest and patiently learn to receive the self you have forsaken for the race of days. At first, your thinking will darken and sadness take over like listless weather. The flow of unwept tears will frighten you. You've traveled too fast over false ground. Now your soul has come to take you back. Take refuge in your senses. Open up to all the small miracles you rush through. Become inclined to watch the way of rain when it falls slow and free. Imitate the habit of twilight, taking time to open the well of color that foster the brightness of day. Draw alongside the silence of stone until its calmness can claim you. Be excessively gentle with yourself. Stay clear of those vexed in spirit. Learn to linger around someone of ease who feels they have all the time in the world. Gradually, you will return to yourself, having learned a new respect for your heart and a joy that dwells far within slow time. So that is the poem by John O'Donohue, A Blessing for One Who is Exhausted.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, yeah, I mean, if there are any lines that stood out to you or, you know, associations that you made with that, welcome those. I guess overall, you know, my first thought continues to be that a lot of it seems to be the description of, you know, being exhausted and not just physically, but maybe mentally and kind of even spiritually, like we the light goes out, you know, and we're dragged down. And that was, for me, like, it's not something I like to pay attention to, although I know that experience, you know, in my life. But then it comes back to when you're in that place where you have to stop, then something else becomes clearer and more present for us. And it's a deeper sense of self that has come through this very difficult time. So, you know, I appreciate the groundedness in it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go over to Pamela. Pamela, do you have any thoughts on the poem that Dr. Jaime has? Oh, no.
Hello, I'm here. I had myself muted. I do that so y'all don't hear me, hear all the stuff in the background.
I lost the show for a minute. Go ahead.
Okay. The two words that stood out to me in the poem was "but rest." And it's like somebody's telling me, "but rest." You know what I'm saying, Pamela? "But rest. Stop what you're doing, but rest." You see what I'm saying? And so I would like to ask Dr. Roma, are you there, Dr. Roma?
Yes.
First, like to ask you what your definition is between religion and spiritual, because sometimes I get that confused, and I think others may too. And I heard you mention the word spiritual. So what is the difference between religion and spirituality?
So religio, the Latin root of religion, means to bind together. And so, you know, I would just say that religion is a set of practices that bind people together. And for the purpose of, you know, knowing self and call it God or, you know, higher being. But also often that can be kind of passed down, you know, in teachings and in external practices that others have identified. Whereas, and so we may get a sense of connection to ourselves and God and higher power through that, but it could also be actions or ideas that aren't really resonant with our sense of self. Or sense of spirit, call it. So to me, spirituality is really not necessarily religious. Spirituality is to me a practice that helps us to integrate parts of ourself or experiences into a wholeness for ourselves. So for some people, spirituality may be connecting with nature, because nature is expansive and it transcends time, and it is part of the kind of the transcendent, and it wakes that up in each person, or creativity in some version, or service to connection to others, or an ascetic practice for some people, like fasting or, you know, walking a pilgrimage or a mindfulness practice or meditation or a kind of prayer. So spirituality can be a lot of different ways that we find a deep connection with this, call it bigger self or more grounded self. But, you know, sometimes they overlap, but sometimes they don't. So that would be my take on it.
Well, I'm a woman of faith, and the words that relate to me are, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." And I don't think that's the rest that the world can give us. I think it's the rest that only our Creator can give us.
Yeah.
I believe that there's a Creator of the world and of me. There's something I like to read. It says, "The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, and all who dwell therein." That's Psalm 24:1. And that psalm just resonates with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, saying there is a Creator. I mean, I don't know if people say a higher power is a creator or not, but a higher power, should you should be able to go to him and or her and and they should have more wisdom than you if they're higher than you, you know.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, that poem was just pointing out that there is a rest that we can find. And you know, you talked about multiple variables about how to find that rest.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. Yeah, that idea of rest.
Go ahead.
It's like a depth to it. It's the same as recreation, as kind of relaxing. I mean,
right.
And in the poem, talks about, you know, learn to linger around someone of ease who feels they have all the time in the world. That sense of timelessness, that's where maybe the connection to nature might help us to have a deep sense of rest to creation, to creator.
And that's when we step out of time, right? We step out of time and say, I'm not going to put a time limit on spending time with myself and thinking about who I am and my identity and where my identity comes from. And I'm not going to listen. I cut my TV off. I don't listen to the world telling me how to think, you know. I don't listen to that tape, that news cycle going over and over and over again in my mind. I mean, you know, when I was sexually abused from the age of 4 to 18 by my stepdad, I wasn't able to think for myself. You know, I didn't have my own identity. You know, I couldn't have my own emotions. And now that I've gotten older and I've gone through healing and become an advocate, I don't want anybody controlling my mind. I don't want anybody controlling my choices. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, back to that, I think the point that when we're experiencing trauma is certainly a different kind of abuse. We may lose our sense of choice and boundaries and so on. And again, the poem talks to that, like, stay clear of those vexed in spirit. So whether it's news or people who are harmful, you know, like, protect ourselves, have good boundaries. Don't watch too much news, right? Focus on things that are nurturing for us.
I like that, the boundaries, you know, that is very important, because sometimes we lose our boundaries and people, you know, they stomp on our boundaries. You know, they did that to us as children when they, you know, exploited us in whatever way we were exploited. But, you know, keeping those boundaries up, because even it's not even just the talk, you know, it's not even just the family members, you know, friends and stuff. I mean, there's people out there that want to bully you, and, you know, and a lot of times, you know, we're used to being bullied, and, you know, we just take it from within, take it to within, and we've got, it can be dangerous. You know, I'm guilty of the same thing. I mean, I've been down on myself lately, and I know that, you know, I need to have more self-esteem, and you can get weary from it, you know, curl up in a fetal position and, you know, feel sorry for myself for a little while. Just get tired. I think you're right. You know, just get tired. So what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think to me that it's a great healthy practice for us to stop every once in a while and really reconnect and really rest, you know, and dedicate some time for that. I mean, for me, the reason I didn't like the poem at first is because it reminded me of when I had no choice. I mean, I had PTSD. I had repressed all these experiences and all this rage, and, you know, eventually it was just too much, and I was forced to stop because I couldn't do a whole lot of things. And, but, you know, the idea of, for us, in a healing way, in an ongoing growth way, to take care of ourselves, you know, to create a space, and you know, I've had the experience, I don't know, you or others have, you know, in times of like real sorrow. I mean, that we notice things that we wouldn't have noticed before. There's an expression, you know, it's when it's darkest night that we can see the stars, you know, most brightly. And yesterday I got a phone call from a friend of mine. It's kind of like a mentor and someone who I love dearly, and sounds like, you know, he's going into hospice, and, you know, I'm a hospice chaplain, and so I walk with people, and that's really beautiful and meaningful. But this is a good friend of mine, and I'm listening, you know, to him talking on the phone, and I'm just looking at like some, I don't know, it was some insect crawling up one of the plants in the outside the window. And it's times when we're forced just to stop and feel and you know, shut out. No, we don't want to pay attention to anything outside. And we notice these little miracles. We pay attention to that timelessness, I think, you mentioned.
All right. Well, you know, I've been working with a gentleman. I think I mentioned this last week on the show, but Dr. Romo, I kind of tell you the latest that I've been working with. Now, I won't say his name. I'll just say his first name. It's a common name. His name is Ben. And he's someone I meet at a place where I go to relax and unwind at the local sports bar up the street. And I'm single. You know, he's cute. He's a little cutie cute guy. You know, we're talking, chit-chatting back and forth. And he said something to me, and it sparked. You know, and then I had to tell him, you know, who I was, you know, that I'm an advocate for NASCA. And, you know, what is NASCA? I told him what NASCA was. And, you know, the first time that we've had several encounters now, but the first time, you know, you could just see the rage on his face. He had to get up and walk away, and he came back. And, you know, I'm not ashamed to say, you know, we were having cocktails. And it wasn't the right time, so I just kind of shut up. You know, we started talking about other things, but I could see the look on his face. And then the next week, we grouped together again, and we're sitting there talking, and he opened up a little bit more to me and told me, you know, some of his story. You know, he was molested by his grandmother at a young age, someone who should have protected him. You know, we often hear about men who, you know, sexually abuse women or men who sexually abuse men, but, you know, this is real for him. His grandmother abused him. And as he, you know, and he, we're sitting there at the sports bar out on the outside, and the tears just, you know, came down his face. He couldn't help it. And as he started talking to me, you could just tell he was so tired and so down on himself and so guilt-stricken that, you know, you could just see it, you know. And he and I, we've bonded. You know, I can't date him now because you can't advocate to him and date him. So, you know, we've become pretty good friends. I mean, that wouldn't be the right thing to do. And, you know, and I can just see, you know, the anguish, you know, and he basically said, I don't like myself. I hate myself. I can't stand to look at myself in the mirror. And, you know, and he had the cutest little face, a little bit too young for me too, but, you know, cutest little facial features, but you could tell his body, he had not been taking good care of himself. And he was out there drinking way too much. And it's one thing to have a couple of cocktails, it's, you know, it's another to get, you know, enormously drunk. And, you know, through the last 3 weeks, you know, I've been working with him and, you know, just, you know, talking to him and telling him, you know, it was 100% her fault. You need to love yourself. And I've seen this guy go from a weary state where he hated himself to, I don't see him out there that much. Most of what where we talk now is text and phone calls and, you know, and his spirits have jumped up. And, you know, he said something to me, you know, I called him one morning to see how he was doing, you know, and I started telling, you know, the typical things that we talk about on here. You know, one of the things I told him, I said, you got to let go of the guilt. You know, it's her monkey, not yours. And I said, what you have to remember is, you know, the physical part of sex feels good unless they're beating and battering you. The physical part feels good, whether you're 3 or 30. And I had to tell him, you know, that's where the guilt comes from, you know, your own guilt, and they throw that guilt on you. You liked it. You wanted it. You leaned into it. You asked for it. You leaned into it. And I told him, I said, you can't do that. You know, she was you were a child put into an adult situation. You know, you're looking back out, you know, as an adult to, you know, blaming yourself for something that you was a child. And, you know, I told him a little bit about my story. You know, I don't want to make it, you know, all about me, but I told him, you know, what I had gone through, been beaten by my grandmother and what, you know, what my stepfather did, blah, 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 blah. And he said, Tammy, you know, I've gone to a therapist. He says, I've gone to many therapists. He said, but to hear, and this just made my heart shine. He said, but to hear this, you know, and this type of, you know, talk from a, another survivor is just incredible. He said, I just never thought that I would be having this conversation. You know, my therapist somewhat helped me, but I didn't quite buy it. You know, I'm paying him to help me. He said, but to hear it from a fellow survivor, he said, that's just phenomenal. You know, it's made a huge difference. And I tell you, all of us advocates can, you know, I'll share that with you advocates, and we've got another caller. I'll catch him in a minute, but I'll finish this thought. You know, as advocates, you know, we can make an impact in people's life, and we can take them from that weary phase and, you know, and put them on a different path. And I told him, I said, honey, and I'm a woman of faith too. And I told him, I said the other day, last night I texted him. I said, you know, because he said, you know, just it was incredible, you know, just one, you know, one conversation striking one conversation over an adult beverage can, you know, can lead us here, you know, somewhere I thought I'd ever be, conversations I thought I'd never have. And I told him, I said, well, baby, it may be just your time to face what what happened to you and heal from it. And I look at it as divine intervention. I said, what are the chances of us sitting there having a cocktail and you dropping a hint to not only a survivor, but someone who advocates, at a national level? I said, God's investing in you. And that's to me, you know, that has really warmed my heart. I want to get your thoughts on that, but I don't want to lose this caller, so I'm going to open this mic, and then I'm going to go back to you, Dr. Romo, and then give Pam a chance to comment as well. We do have a caller from area code 651. Who do we have the pleasure of speaking with?
Hi, Tammy. This is Elizabeth Sullivan out of Minnesota.
Hey, Elizabeth Sullivan. Boy, dang, what a blast from the past.
I saw your post on Facebook that you wanted caller, so I thought, well, I just got done with the meeting and thought I'd jump in and say hello and listen in.
Nice. Well, I want to tell everybody who you are. If you don't know, Dr. Romo and Pamela, Elizabeth Sullivan. I shouldn't have said your last name, Elizabeth. She is, and I'm sorry, but you run a 501c3, so I apologize for that. That's my bad. But
no, don't worry about it.
She used to be one of our hosts. she was very connected into NASCA, and then she went and started her own organization in Minnesota. So I want to talk a little bit more about that, Elizabeth, but I didn't want to lose you on the show, but we did have a conversation going, and I want to go back to Dr. Romo and let him comment, and then give Pamela a chance to comment, and then I'm going to come back to you, Missy.
Sounds good.
Okay,
well,
cool.
So Elizabeth, go ahead. I read a poem earlier, and I'll read it in a bit, one of those lines from what you're saying, Tammy, was it seemed like that person had a chance to slow down, so he was connecting with someone else who called someone of ease, someone who was at ease with himself, right? You were at ease with yourself to know your experience and what was yours and what was not. And that allowed him to this other line. The line says, you have traveled too fast over false ground, now your soul to take you back. So we can gloss over, we can, you know, cope by busyness or putting up fronts of being, you know, like invincible or any number of things, but we need that time to stop and feel and let our soul come back to us. Sounds like what you helped them do.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that feedback. Pamela, what do you think?
About what he said?
Yeah, about the story that I told about my friend. Any feedback on that?
I definitely think that's providence. I mean, you know, if we pray and ask the Lord to bring people in our paths that we need to minister to, I mean, that's who we're here for. We're here to, you know, to love our neighbor as we love ourselves, you know. And so we do love in ourselves when we reach out to others. You know, we feel good about ourselves. It raises our self-esteem to be productive for another person.
Right. Well, it just broke my heart to hear him say things like, I hate myself. I can't stand to look at myself in the mirror. You know, I'm basically worthless, you know, and I'm just barely surviving. You know, and that just broke my heart because, you know, I'll be honest with you, everybody at that sports, you know, this little patio bar, everybody thinks he's weird. You know, and that bugs me. That bugs me to no end. And I will always step up and say, you know what? I like different people. I like weird people. I think they're interesting. They usually have great stories. And that's my feedback. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have it. I'm just not going to have him, you know, people, you know, talking about him. And, you know, I talk positive about him. He's down on himself enough. I don't need everybody else talking about him, you know, and he's become my friend. And I'm just, you know, it just warms my heart to see him, and I can just see him, you know, because when we advocate for so long, you know, we can't save everybody, and we're not responsible for saving everybody, but every once in a while, you'll just see somebody just thrive and heal, and it just warms my heart. So I'm just happy.
Mm.
Let me go back to Elizabeth from Minnesota. Okay, Elizabeth, we talked about that. I want to get you plugged in. Dr. Romo did read a poem when we first started the show, and it basically pivoted on being weary and being tired.
Mm.
We've got an echo in the background. I'm not quite sure, but anyway, Elizabeth, what are your thoughts?
You know, it's funny that you brought the weary and tiredness up tonight because I facilitate a group on Thursday nights, and that's one of the things that, you know, survivors, I work with survivors of childhood sexual abuse, and that's one of the biggest things, especially when you're on the beginning of your healing journey where, you know, the box flies open and you're dealing with all the trauma of the past that you never had a chance to process, and how, you know, when you're in the midst of that, you can become so tired and weary, and it's hard to cling to the idea that there might be hope in this sort of thing. And I think, you know, I maybe I'm getting off topic here, but I think it's so easy, especially as survivors who are really, really struggling in those beginning part of our healing journey, it's really hard to think that we'll ever get past all that tiredness and the weariness and all the sludge that holds us down. And when I heard you talking about the person that you had run into that you connected with, I thought, you know, as survivors, to go out and share part of your story, like, if I'm understanding this right, like you did with him, then you're giving him permission to really unload some of this stuff as well. And that really lightens the load. And I think that's what, you know, helps us to be able to spread light and be able to breathe hope into other people as well. And I'm sorry I came in late. I missed the poem. It sounds like that would have been a good one to hear.
Well, I can repeat it. Either now or in a few minutes, if you want to talk.
You can go ahead
and
read it again if you want to. Go ahead and read it again, Dr. Romo, if you don't mind.
Not at all. I just want to comment, though, that the idea of, I think of a fire, you know, like taking, lighting someone else's, you know, whatever, candle or another, you know, stick of wood. That's the hope, the learning, the growth, the new life that we have when we go through our healing, and it's, you know, it doesn't start with us, it doesn't end with us, but it's because it sounds like, you know, Tammy, because of your presence, because of your learning and integration, that you could speak with, you know, authenticity and without shame, and that, you know, was a fire that allowed, you know, him to kind of pick that up. So here's the poem. It was by John O'Donohue, A Blessing for One Who is Exhausted. When the rhythm of the heart becomes hectic, time takes on the strain until it breaks. Then all the unattended stress falls in on the mind like an endless increasing weight. The light in the mind becomes dim. things you could take in stride before now become laborsome events of will. Weariness invades your spirit. Gravity begins falling inside you, dragging down every bone. The tide you never valued has gone out, and you are marooned on unsure ground. Something within you is closed down, and you cannot push yourself back to life. You've been forced to enter empty time. The desire that drove you has relinquished. There's nothing else to do now but rest and patiently learn to receive the self you have forsaken for the race of days. At first, your thinking will darken and sadness take over like listless weather. The flow of unwept tears will frighten you. You have traveled too fast over false ground. Now your soul has come back to take you. Now your soul has come to take you back. Take refuge in your senses. Open up to all the small miracles you rushed through. Become inclined to watch the way of rain when it falls slow and free. Imitate the habit of twilight, taking time to open the well of color that fosters the brightness of day. Draw alongside the silence of stone. Its calmness can claim you. Be excessively gentle with yourself. Stay clear of those vexed in spirit. Learn to linger around someone of ease who feels they have all the time in the world. Gradually, you will return to yourself, having learned a new respect for your heart and the joy that dwells far within slow time. That's John O'Donohue, a blessing for one who is exhausted.
Wow, that's really good.
And that one line, Tammy, to me relates to what, I can find it.
I'm sorry?
Oh, I'm trying to find the line that...
Oh, okay.
Relates, I think, to one person sharing their story and helping another. Something within you is closed down, and you cannot push yourself back to life. And to me, that speaks to the, if we call it, divine intervention, or we call it, the God in us, our spirit connecting with another, that we don't do that on ourselves. Desmond Tutu says, a person is a person because of other people, and this idea of healing, recovery, it's one person helps another because they can't push themselves back to life. Another person sees the light or hope in someone else, and that helps them to move forward. So, there are many lines that stand out, but thanks,
Well, thank you. Well, speaking of helping other folks, and then I want to go to Pamela, but I want to go to Elizabeth. Elizabeth, why don't you tell us a little bit about your 501c3, and you know all about helping people because yours is a local where the locals come in and meet face-to-face, right?
Yeah, due to COVID, unfortunately, we haven't been able to have our in-house meetings, so a lot of it's over Zoom right now. Because we just in Minnesota, due to the COVID restrictions and this and that, even though we're considered essential, it's just to keep members 6 feet apart and this sort of thing just wasn't going to be something that could be easily done. So we had to switch all over to Zoom, but on the flip side of that, fortunately it's worked out really well and things have been going really good. We started out in around 2014 and then became a nonprofit in 2015. So we worked solely with survivors of childhood sexual abuse and then also a lot of times we'll incorporate maybe partners and families into the program as well, just so they can get a better understanding of what their survivor is going through and that sort of thing. I love that poem, and I actually, as you were reading it, Googled it at the same time. I love it because I think it's so easy, especially at the beginning of the healing journey when, like I was saying, when, I mean, you really do feel like all the heaviness of the world, all the darkness and this or that. And I think, like you guys were saying, to have an advocate or have somebody come alongside and say, yes, this happened to me too, and to be in that person who's maybe further along on their healing journey, to be able to sit with them in that darkness and help to help bring them to light and help them to see that even in that darkness, you know, that there is some hope and that in you know, again, like you were saying, Tammy, that, you know, by sharing of yourself, then you help that person with their darkness and see that there is hope. I mean, that's an amazing gift and humanity. And I just really like this poem. And if you don't mind, I'd like to share it in our groups, if that's okay.
I mean, it's not my poem. It's online, and it's... He's an awesome writer. He's got a lot of,
mm-hmm.
lot of deep, thoughtful work. Yeah.
Right. Well, thank you so much for sharing.
I like this one, too. Let me go to Pamela and get her involved. Pamela, what do you think?
Well, first of all, can you hear me? Hello?
Can.
You can hear me.
Go ahead.
Am I doing any feedback? Hello?
No, it's okay.
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to ask Dr. Romo, you said you were tired in the beginning of the show. Are you tired physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually? Where are you tired? I hear it in your voice.
Yeah, I mean, more because there are a lot of... you know, things that I'm involved with that I'm kind of responsible for. And this is a time of transition for some people around me and, you know, literal reconstruction. You know, we've got projects going on that we haven't done before, like putting on solar and creating a new living space. So, I mean, there's some good things, but all together, you know, it's, and I think I mentioned, you know, this good friend of mine who I just spoke with yesterday, who may not be with us much longer. And, you know, that's so emotionally, there's some real sadness for me. And,
yeah.
You know, for me years ago, someone sent me a card, you know, Elizabeth mentioned people early in recovery, you know, can feel a lot of that exhaustion. And it's easy to shut it out. And years ago, early in recovery, somebody sent me a postcard and all it said was, like, it was an incomplete sentence, and I thought the rest of it was going to be on the inside of the card. All it said is, I hope you're feeling, ... And there was nothing inside of the card. But it was like, yeah, I hope you're feeling. And so it's a good thing. You know,
yeah.
Sadness is a good response to something that's sad rather than, you know, not acknowledging it or running past it. So that's where the tiredness, I think, comes from. The other things are, they take time, you know. This week and every month has a lot of additional morning and evening meetings. So there's another piece of it that I think the emotion is where it comes from.
So do you have people? Oh, yeah. Do you have people around you that you can share some of the load to? You know, rather than you taking all this on.
Thank you. And this is, you know, in that poem, I'm often in my role, you know, the person who has all the time, you know, for others to process and so on. But yeah, I do, and a bit more of a new behavior for me, though I think I've done a good amount of work, is to reach out to others. And if someone else, like, and that's happened, a couple of colleagues have reached out and said, hey, if you want to talk. And I've followed up. You know, I've responded. And last night I had a men's group, and you know, that was a space. So I do have a wonderful network of people. And without that, I think it would be so terrible. So
I'm a social worker. Got a master's in social work. And I, you know, social work is based on systems theory, which when one system is affected, you know, it affects all the systems, like, say, a family system. If somebody's hurting in the family, then it affects the whole family. So I was thinking about when Tammy was talking about Ben and how now she has become part of his social support, you know, and who we don't know who else his social support is unless Tammy's found out. But support systems are very, very significant in our lives, you know.
Oh, yeah. You know, just like, you know, sometimes people wonder, well, you know, two people experience the same event, the same trauma, and one it's devastating, the other one they seem to get through okay. And, you know, part of that relates to the background skills and resilience they've already built up. And part of it is, a big part is having a social system, having, you know, people around us. And Gabor Mate is this going through one of his books called The Body Keeps Score. And there are a lot of studies he points out about the difference between for people who get cancer, and in these studies, there may be a trauma, but that alone doesn't lead necessarily to a disease like cancer. But a trauma plus isolation has a much higher incidence of developing a disease like cancer. So,
Why do you think that is, excuse me? Why do you think that is?
You know, there's an expression, kind of odd, what we don't excrete, we repeat. And emotionally, I think there's something to that. What we take in that is, you know, difficult, toxic, overwhelming, not only has a chemical reaction that stays in us, unless we process it out. There's another that, you know, simple one. A burden, a joy shared is twice joy. A burden shared is, you know, sorrow shared is half sorrow. There is something that we are interconnected, you know, and for us to make that connection with someone else kind of channels somehow. I have these just terrible, like, analogies, but it's an old remedy, not really remedy, but a response to a finger burn, you know, with a match or a stove or whatever. You burn your finger, if you put your finger up to your earlobe,
right.
There's not a lot of nerves there, so that somehow it becomes conduit, it conducts the throbbing, gives your, you know, pain somewhere to go. There's just something powerful about that we are interconnected. Scientific explanation. Yeah, go ahead.
The guests that I heard last night on the show said that if we don't get this out and we keep it in, it's actually a poison to us. It's a poison.
Right.
Yes.
Well, you know, this is Tammy. When you're under stress and you're under, you know, depressed and those type of feelings, you know, I love Amy Cuddy. I just absolutely love her. She's got a wonderful TEDx video, and I refer to it a lot. Study was, you know, we know that our body language affects other people, read our body language, but how does our body language affect us? So she did some studies, you know, and she found out that if we force ourselves to smile, we can actually become happier. You know, if you stick a pencil in your teeth, you know, you can become happy. You know, that's how your body works. But if you're under stress and you're closed up and you're always, you know, your arms folded, hunched over with your legs, you know, that's what we tend to do when we're closed up. You know, it's about opening up. When you're closed up, they did tests, and they basically had people, they had certain people who stood, you know, in an open position, a power position. They had other people who posed in passive positions. And then they had them, you know, then they tested their saliva. And the amounts of cortisol, if I'm saying that correctly, dramatically increased in those who were closed up. And then it dramatically decreased for the people who opened up. But the point in all that, in reference to this conversation, is when we are under stress and we are closed up and we're depressed, our cortisol spikes, and cortisol is like poison to our body. And if your body's always in distress because of your cortisol chemicals, I think Dr. Romo said something about the chemicals. You know, if we can become physically sick, and it can create all kinds of issues. So that's why it's so important for us to get it out. You know, try to be open. You know, keep our sadness and our tiredness to a minimum. It's not always easy. I mean, because I have a very stressful job, and it's tough. And, you know, being a survivor, you know, I've got self-esteem issues that I deal with, and it's tough sometimes. But I think that has a lot to do with, you know, what you guys were talking about. So your thoughts? Anybody? We do have some background noise, guys. I'm not quite sure where it's coming from. But does anybody have any thoughts?
I can agree with what you brought up, and I hadn't heard of that study, but it makes sense. And cortisol is a stress hormone, and for closed, you know, it's got nowhere to go. The scientist is pointing out that the body has an intelligence, and one of the things in this book, The Body Keeps Score, maybe it's in one of his talks, but you know, he asked the audience, Gabor Mate, like, how many of you had a gut feeling about something and you ignored it, and then, you know, it led to something, you know, less than what you wanted. It wasn't a good outcome. You know, most people raise their hands, like, how many of you had that gut feeling and you ignored it and you felt great about it later? You know, like, maybe a few people. There's something in us that we, you know, our bodies give us information, and, you know, if we don't pay attention to it, if we don't pay attention to the stress hormones, we don't let it out, it will, and that's kind of the point of his book, it's like at some point it is toxic, and it will turn out in a real destructive way to make us stop.
Okay. Well, I just sent you that message on Messenger on Facebook. It's one of my favorite TEDx videos. Dr. Amy Cuddy, she's a professor at Harvard. And it's just, if you have time, please watch it. It's well worth your time. I'll post it on NASCA as well for anybody else who wants to watch it. What do you think about all this? I've got her mic closed because that's where the... Elizabeth, it was the background noise, I think, was coming from you, but I cut your mic, but I'm going to open it back up. Elizabeth,
okay, yeah,
what are your
I actually had myself muted, but as the doctor was talking, I was actually, I know the book, The Body Keeps Score, and I think that author is just amazing, too. Same with Peter Levine and some others, but I was thinking about, I couldn't remember if it was in The Body Keeps Score. Peter Levine talked about trauma being stuck in the body or these emotions being stuck in the body. And as you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, one of them had used the illustration of like a gazelle being taken down and you know, by a lion and then getting away and how they'll stand out to the side and just shake off all that extra adrenaline and stress and everything that just happened, you know, the gazelle that gets away
once it gets to safety, just shakes that all off, and then they go on with their day. And I'm thinking, as you were talking, somebody who's under stress or has suffered trauma, if they never got that chance to really shake that off, to talk about it, to process it, to sit with another human and have somebody reflect back truth to them, they just keep that energy within their body that just leads to disease and illness and everything else. And I think that's where community comes in to almost aid as a shaking off, where then you're taking, being able to talk about what's holding you back or what's depressing you or the trauma that you have inside. It's that sharing with another human being and having truth reflected back and light reflected back that helps us to shake off all these negative trauma symptoms and this and that that get housed in our system so bad. And so as you were talking about that, that's what kind of came to mind. And I think that's why, you know, situations like this where we're having conversations or you have an organization like NASCA where it's bringing people together and allowing for a platform where people can talk and discuss and normalize certain things and sharing each other's grief and sharing each other's joy really helps to bring that trauma out and helps to breathe life into a lot of people. I don't know, that just kind of came to my mind as you were talking.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it was Peter Levine who talks about this shaking. And that's a kind of a therapy that some people do. I think it's called like somatic therapy, where they people actually lay on the ground and just kind of tremble, just kind of like subtly let the body move and shake out this, you know, what's been kept inside.
Absolutely, or the crying and releasing the tears and the toxins that have built up.
And so, you know, Pamela, early off, started with a question about spirituality and versus kind of religion. What's the difference? And one of the things I was thinking about spirituality was that it's integrative, and that we connect our bodies with our minds. You know, we don't separate them. And so different practices like may involve our bodies that are just ways to help us to be more whole. And wholeness to me relates to healing. And so just for us to pay attention to our bodies is medicine. And Tammy, as you were talking about that study about power positions, I was standing and putting my hands up in the air like the runners at the end of a race. And let that sink in, and I put my hands on my hips and did kind of the chest back, you know, superhero kind of stance. Connect and take care of and acknowledge and honor our bodies, which from abuse and trauma have been dishonored, you know, and have been neglected and so on. When we reverse, instead of being dissociated because of stress or whatever, you know, is going on, and we regulate, we reconnect, that's healing. To me, that's spiritual work. And then to take it beyond, it's not just for us. It doesn't come, healing doesn't come, you know, on our own, and it doesn't belong for us. So the purpose of it all, I think, why I think some people, lots of people who have done that integration work can say, yeah, I regret nothing in my life. You know, all these terrible things that happened, I wouldn't have wished them on other people. I don't regret them because now I have a kind of compassion or strength that isn't just for me. You know, it's a service. And to me, that's awesome. All spiritual work.
That's awesome, Dr. Rama. Awesome. Miss Pamela, I wanted to say part of it. I remember after I repressed my memories in my 30s and 40s because I was really busy with my husband, my household, and different things like that. But when I got in my 50s, that's when I could not contain my repressed memories anymore. And I had never had a therapist before, and I finally had to get a therapist. And I don't know where this is coming from. You know, I thought I had forgiven it. Well, it wasn't anything to do with forgiveness. But what I remember doing, and I wanted to see if you had any insight into this, and Elizabeth and Tammy as well, is I kept trying to make this dysfunctional family work. You understand what I'm saying? In other words, it was dysfunctional, and now we're in a new era, new decade. So how can I make this work despite my memories? You understand what I'm saying? So it's like what Miss Elizabeth said. It was like a butting your head against something. You know, you keep trying to butt your head and thinking you're going to get somewhere. And it took me a while to realize I had to separate myself from my sister. I had to separate myself from my mother actually kicked me out of the house after she knew I was going to sue my abuser. She didn't want me to do that. Have a civil lawsuit. She pimped me out to her second husband for 14 years, and I finally found out that she did that. And it scared him so much that I found out that he actually went and told the police on himself and confessed to the crime. So it opened up a civil case. But, you know, I'm just trying to picture myself as trying to make this dysfunctional family. Before these repressed memories come up, I kept butting my head against the wall. Why can't I have a good relationship with my sister now? Why can't I have a good relationship with my mother now? What's wrong, you know? But it was inside of me. It was the damage inside of me that was keeping that external, you know?
Mm-hmm. And so after, when it became clear, you said this came forward in the memories and so on in your 50s, afterwards, how did your relationships with the others change?
I couldn't have a relationship with them because my mother, number one, you know, it wasn't too many weeks later she died. She laid down. She was getting ready for work. She laid down on the bed and died. And then my sister really flipped out. She was narcissistic and neglected, and she just started flipping out. And so, you know, it pretty much ended. My other sister went somewhere, and I don't have a clue where she is. So I don't know if God was just taking these people out of my life because, you know, now that I was healed, I couldn't let them pull me back down, you know.
I missed that. Did you say the last part after you were healed?
I think God took them out of my life. And I guess people do have to leave eventually, you know. But I want listeners to understand, you know, that don't keep trying to stay in toxic relationships just because they're blood, you know. Really think about it and talk it over with your therapist and make sure, you know, because some people are really on your life for a season, but just because they're blood doesn't mean they're going to be in your life forever is what I'm trying to say.
Right. Well, I will make a comment on that, and I'll open it up for other thoughts as well. I believe that is a personal decision everybody has to make for themselves, and there is no wrong answer. I 100% agree that, you know, just like you, Pamela, you had to get those toxic people out of your life. The toxic was never going to go away, and you made that choice for yourself. You know, if people do choose not to cut their family off, that's not, you know, that's not the wrong answer either. That's a personal decision they have to make. But people have to, and just like you said, you know, you got to put up boundaries. You can't accept the same behavior if you choose to do that. So I think. I think both answers are right. You know, some people do, some people choose not to. With me personally, I cut my mother off for 5 years. I did not see her for 5 years. My mother's old. You know, she told, you know, she protected me. She was not one of my abusers, but she protected me from my grandmother. But she turned a blind eye. I don't know if she didn't want to admit it to herself or couldn't admit it, or, you know, she was financially bound or too old. I don't know. but she took a blind eye to what my stepfather did, and he's toxic. So for 5 years, I decided to cut him out of my life. I didn't associate with him. I didn't call him. I didn't go by Christmas, nothing. But my mother's up there in age, you know, and I made the decision to have my mother in my life. And I knew a long time ago, if I want my mother in my life, I have to stomach my stepfather. But I have learned, you know, first of all, I've moved a long ways away. They're in Georgia. I'm in South Florida. So they're not next door. You know, that was one of my remedies. And I do go home and I do have a relationship with my mother. But you better believe I've got some strong boundaries. Even when I moved away and I came back, every time I'd go over there within 5 minutes, you know, we'd be in an argument. You know, me and my stepfather and I would get into an argument. My mother would take his side. I'd storm off and leave. You know, I may come back an hour later. I may come back 20 minutes later. You know, I may come back 3 or 4 days later, 3 or 4 months later. I did that. That was a pattern. But then I've gotten to a point where now I can go home and I've got such strong boundaries up. They don't dare bring up anything. They don't dare bring up any of the arguments. I think because I cut them off for so long and they're so, you know, old and their health isn't doing well, they're just happy to see me. So, you know, even though I didn't cut them, you know, I did bring them back into my life. I've got some really strong boundaries. I can't speak for Bill, but I don't think Bill would mind me telling this story. He's described this on the air a couple of times with his mother as well. You know, his mother wasn't one of his abusers, but, you know, he had some other issues. And, you know, he did the same thing. When she started that behavior, he'd say, "Mom, I'm not going to tolerate that behavior. I'm leaving. I'll check back on you." And he would check on her, and if the behavior continued, he would exit again. And it got to the point to where she knew if she, you know, wanted him there, then she would change her behavior. So the point being is, you know, that is the right answer for some people, but if you choose to stay there, you better have some good boundaries. I want some feedback on what you guys think about that. You know, Elizabeth and Dr. Roma, what do you guys think? I just said both, so I probably don't know who to speak to, but either one of you.
I guess as far as you had mentioned boundaries, and I think we really do teach people how to treat us, and oftentimes when we're coming out of families with dysfunction or came out of trauma, our boundaries were completely blown. So a lot of us didn't even know what it meant to have boundaries. So I agree with you 100% that if we are going to have people that are in our family dynamic that are still dysfunctional, to really have those strong boundaries that protect ourselves and keep it healthy, I think that's really, really needed. And so often, like the other gal was saying, that you know so often we do need to separate ourselves from the people in our lives that maybe are dysfunctional, that are adding to our illnesses or adding to the pain that we have. I think sometimes you know, as we begin to heal, as we start to get healthier in our own lives, then we start to see, instead of looking at ourselves as the one who's messed up and they all have it together and we're the ones messed up, as we heal, we start to see where some of our dysfunction was. We get healthy. We start to see how their dysfunction, yeah, and we start to notice, we start to, through our healing process, start to realize maybe we weren't the ones that were this dysfunction, the ones that we're raising or the people that are around us are the dysfunction. So as we begin to heal and we begin to have self-worth and self-esteem, we realize that we don't deserve the treatment that is coming from these people. And through that processing and healing and learning and even if bringing spirituality in it, we start to realize that we have more worth than that. And because of that, then we do need to put these boundaries up. And if people aren't going to abide by those healthy boundaries and continue to create misery and dysfunction, then we do need to separate ourselves. And I think what's great with you, Tammy, is that you're saying, you know, you got to the point where you're like, these are my boundaries, and they're going to be firm, and I'm not going to let you chisel away at this. This is the way it's going to be if I'm to stay into your life. And it sounds like they are rising to that level of understanding that if they break that boundary, you're not going to be there. So I always tell survivors or people coming from dysfunction that, you know, people in our lives can choose to grow alongside us and with us, or they can stay in their dysfunction, but we aren't obligated to stay and swim in that pool with them.
Thank you for that incredible share.
Absolutely.
That was
positive. Thank you for that share.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
Dr. Roma, what are your thoughts?
Well, I certainly agree with the importance of boundaries, and I know that when people have trauma and certainly sexual abuse, that our sense of self at a profound level is shattered or wounded. And so as a result, we can often have kind of these either-or approaches to relationships, you know, like we're overly trusting or not trusting at all, or overly, you know, challenging or, you know, totally like withdrawn and going along with. And so I think it's, so one, boundaries are like a real indicator of our own healing. And I think we kind of try them out. We practice, see as we develop them, what works. I think about in a healthy relationship, whether it's individuals or, you know, family or groups or a church or whatever, that people can trust one another. And people, I think Tammy mentioned choice. People have a choice about things. And people have a sense of safety, physical, emotional, even spiritual. People have a sense of voice, and people are empowered. I mean, it's a healthy relationship. And I think that's what we have to learn. You know, like, how much can I trust this person who has in the past betrayed us? You know, how much can I really bring my whole self and speak up? Or not, you know, just overdoing.
Right.
What is safe for me? How do I know that I am safe in my own skin, and so that I can recognize when others are doing something that doesn't feel safe? And, you know, we have choices. So are we going to be around people that we feel more of ourselves and bigger and learn and grow, or around people where it just feels toxic? And maybe that's not a permanent decision, but I think this is just a learning process, I guess is my point. But and I mentioned those five things because when people are abused and have different, you know, overwhelming traumatic experiences, those are the things that are gone. Right? We don't know who to trust. We don't feel safe. We don't have a sense of choice or voice, or we feel powerless. So to me, those are real dynamic, you know, and because we've experienced what it's like to have those damaged, then we need to rebuild, and that's a learning process. So maybe we don't do it perfectly, but we're doing our best.
There you go.
Right.
Good
thought.
Pamela, I was going to bring it back to you because you started that conversation, that piece of the conversation, and we went to Elizabeth and Dr. Romo, and you got feedback from all three of us. So what are your thoughts now?
Well, I used to have a poster a long time ago. It says there is, and I just love that. But I wanted to talk to Dr. Romo again about healing the sexually abused heart, a workbook for survivors, thrivers, and supporters. Is that okay if we talk about that for a minute?
Sure.
Okay. So I noticed you said healing the heart. So how does the heart play into this as far as the healing that we need from the past?
I thought that was interesting.
Wow. Yeah, you know, I hadn't thought of this connection, but years ago, I spent a summer in the jungles of southern Mexico in Chiapas and lived with people who were very much descendants of the Mayans, right? They didn't speak Spanish. They spoke, you know, the Mayan dialects. And they had a very holistic sense of self. And when they might go to a regular, you know, traditional doctor, you know, if they had a, you know, broken arm maybe, the doctor say, where does it hurt? And they say, my heart hurts. And it's just this deep sense, you know, the heart as our core. I know, you know, trauma is one version of it is that it's wounds where there's no blood. So it's not just physical. There's something, you know, when our bodies have repaired, these memories that are in us that may keep us from having an open heart, you know, and that's courage, right? Having an open heart, being able to face what is. So, you know, to me that just speaks to the deeper sense of self, that after the incidents have gone on, that deeper sense of self continues to carry those memories. And I guess, you know, in some profound experiences that I've had, it felt like things kind of actually physically left me and started from the center of my being. So it's where that image comes from for me.
So mental health, when we say mental health or mental illness, we think of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not
mm-hmm.
just the mind. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's got to be the emotions, the
mm-hmm.
you know, like when we're verbally abused,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't hurt us physically,
right?
But it tears us up somewhere inside of us, you know,
mm-hmm.
breaks us, damages us. But and it's a workbook, so I'm really interested to get that. I'm going to get that. What year was it copyrighted?
Ooh. 10 years ago.
You're kidding.
No.
So it's just probably coming on the scene today, Jim. I need to get that book out about. I have a website, womensurvivorsinbusiness.org, and I'm getting a collection of people's stories. And I also want to put up their books and workbooks of healing. So I'd like to get some copies of your book and put it on my website for people to see it and purchase them.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Well, we've got about 10 minutes of talk time. We can continue to talk if anybody has anything on their heart to share about what we've already been talking about. Anything that's been said that you want to add, now would be a good time. Anybody, Elizabeth, you got any thoughts on what we've shared so far?
I really liked what the doctor said about, I could almost visualize it when he said that there was so much pain in the heart and he actually felt like there was a release from it. And it was just a really good visual to see the release of just the pain. I think a lot of times, when there's so much pain, whether it's coming from a trauma or something else, it's so often we feel it so hard in our heart, our chest area, and our back of our necks, our body, and I think in the Western culture especially, we separate the mind and the body, and I think the whole healing, which I think I've heard in this conversation a little bit tonight, is that it is a whole mind, body, spiritual approach in order to
mm-hmm.
release that. And I think, so often, and I'm probably getting off, I tend to go off on stuff, but I think so often we try and go away from pain And unfortunately, I think the only way to get to joy is to go through the pain and through the ugly to get to the other side. And that means going deep inside of ourselves and working with the younger pieces that were hurt or damaged, and then being able to process and release. And I think when you do that, then that visual that the doctor said about feeling that release come from your heart is just, you know, allowing that to just leave the body and then be able to experience the joy that all of us, you know, are deserving of.
Mm.
I really love the discussion tonight. I apologize for coming in late. I wish I would have been here from the beginning because it's really rich and I really enjoy it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being here. It's just absolutely, it's just wonderful to hear your voice. I miss you, Elizabeth.
Yeah, you too.
I know you're very, very busy, but you need to pop in every now and again.
Absolutely.
Well, let's say we've got about 8 minutes left, and I want to give anybody who wants the opportunity, and we'll start with you, Elizabeth, if you want to share your website with anyone who may be listening, and I'll do the same for Pamela and Dr. Romo as well. Let's go with you, Elizabeth, if you want to share, if anyone's listening. We know we have people who stream in. We can't see the stats until after the show, but, you know, there could be 30 people listening. There could be 300. I looked at the stats, and there was actually 2,000, so... You don't know who we're reaching.
Wow.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely. Thank you for this opportunity. So the organization is called Empower Survivors. It's all one word, and you can find it under www.empowersurvivors.net. And also you can find us on Facebook. So we have a public page and several closed groups.
Okay.
So empowersurvivors.net, and thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And Pamela, do you have any information you want to share? Have you written a book, or are you writing a book, or is there anything that you'd like to share for anybody who might be listening? Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. I wrote a book, and then I wrote a companion workbook. And the title of the book is Pimped from 4 to 18, A Survivor's Fast Track to Mental Wholeness, and the workbook is Grief Stages Plus Narrative Therapy Workbook. And what I found, I went to social work because I really wanted to understand myself, okay? And through that, you know, working through that, I found theories that resonated with me, and one of them was stage theory, and Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, The Stages of Death and Dying. What I did was I took myself through the stages of the loss of my sexual innocence. And I really found out, and I believe, because it helped me find my way to healing, is that I think a victim of adult survivor of child sex abuse has to grieve their loss of their sexual innocence before they can really get on the healing path. They have to go through the denial, the acceptance, you know, the denial, anger, bargaining, and so forth. And then I added three more: closure, striving, and thriving. And that's how I was able to process it and get healed. So I have complete closure and healing. And
okay.
Yeah. And that's on my website.
Okay.
WomenSurvivorsInBusiness.org.
Okay, well, thank you for sharing that. Thank you very much. I want to turn it over to Dr. Romo. We've got a little less than five minutes left. So, Dr. Romo, I want to turn it over to you for your final thoughts and anything that you want to share, you know, as far as websites or your book. Dr. Romo?
Thank you. One of the things that I was hearing earlier reminded me of the poem by Marion Williamson, Our Deepest Fear. And just the one part at the end really resonates with me, that that when we realize, you know, that all the negative stuff has come to us is not us. We didn't deserve it. Doesn't define us. And in fact, through that, when we heal, I appreciate this, Elizabeth saying, yeah, we have to go through it. And Alan was talking about grief. We're generally not grieving. I want to jump to the finish line. I want to start at the finish line, right? I'm smart enough. I can do this. But we really have to go through acknowledging and feeling and grieving the different losses to get to that point of acceptance, you know, and where there's no resistance, you know, to the life that we've had, and we're able to be responsive. Then I think we really kind of wake up or grow into ourselves. And so the lines in the poem is, we're all meant to shine as children do. We're born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we're liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. So I just really appreciate each of you in the ways that you are using your experience in integrating and healing. And you know, we're always in that process of recognizing earlier versions of ourselves and what we knew at the time and what the best we could do at the time, and you know, continuing to learn from that. But acceptance, it becomes, you know, this light. It becomes this presence that is powerful, that allows others to grow. And so I just appreciate that with all the books and, you know, programs and organizations that you are a part of and are creating just to support others. I took my experience in part of the president of a nonprofit called the Child Friendly Faith Project, which is not really a great name, I think. I think we're really about helping to end religious authority maltreatment, child maltreatment, in whatever way that happens. And so that's www.childfriendlyfaith.org. And I just appreciate that we're all doing our part the best we can to help others to be safe, help others to be their great, you know, the deepest self, the self with a big S, not just a little S. Yeah.
You're here. Well, thank you for sharing that, Dr. Romo. Like I said, you know, when I see that you're going to be on the show, I just smile because I know it's going to be a good show. I think you're a phenomenal guest, and you're a phenomenal contributor to our NASCA show. I just got the 90-second mark, so I've got to do this really quickly. Pamela and Elizabeth, I want to give you a quick opportunity to thank and say goodbye to Dr. Romo. He's on, I believe, is it the third Tuesday, the third Thursday of every month? I'd have to go back and look.
Yes.
Okay, the third Thursday. So, Pamela, let's start with you. Pamela, you want to say a few words, just quick?
Dr. Romo, I'm glad to meet you, and hopefully I'll be on more with you and get to know you better.
Thank you. Likewise.
I want to thank you for coming on the show, and I am going to get your workbook. It's still on Amazon?
It might be. It's been a while. Yeah.
Okay.
If not, get a hold of me. I'll send one.
Okay. Thank you, Pamela. Quickly, Elizabeth, because we're almost out of time, but I want you to say a quick word, really quick. Thanks.
I just want to say thank you so much for being on tonight, and I look forward to jumping on again and hearing you speak again.
Okay. Thanks. Appreciate it. Likewise. Thanks, Tammy.
Okay, guys, I got about 17 seconds, so thank you, Dr. Romo. Elizabeth, it's always a pleasure to see you. Pamela, thank you for your support. God bless the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse.
Merry Christmas.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thanks.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that's gone. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.